Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers lose in Toronto. Why? Because everyone is sidelined, Andy. Reason to be concerned? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube, which is zooming towards 10,000 subscribers, thanks to support from people just like you. That's where you go to get the podcast a little early, particularly on non-game nights. Thank you again for all the support you guys are giving that channel. Really growing fast. Great community of people. Talk to us. Talk to each other. Do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. Andy, you might have found listings at LinkedIn for temporary positions on the Lakers. Because they were short some dudes Wednesday in Toronto. No Anthony Davis, still feeling under the weather. No LeBron James, got a tender ankle, still bugging him. No Patrick Beverley. What was that, a knee, I believe?
It was a knee.
And who else was missing? I'm missing someone.
Wenyen Gabriel, shoulder issue.
Wenyen Gabriel, right, the shoulder. He was already out. So four Lakers playing four men down in their rotation and predictably lost 126 to 113. It was never really close. This was not like the game on Tuesday in Cleveland where the Lakers really were in it the entire time until a late push in the fourth. This one, they were down by 20 relatively quickly and stayed that way. That said, I mean, I couldn't find a whole lot to get upset about. They were missing four of their most important players, or two of them at least.
Matt Ryan's sitting in Minnesota right now drinking tea going, but that's none of my business. And by the way, too, in terms of when it rains, it pours, and these things start adding up in ways that might not have seemed a week or so ago even slightly important, but now become a thing. Juan Toscano-Anderson ended up dusted off and getting a start in this game because, you know, they're missing half the roster, and it has become abundantly clear now. Russell Westbrook is the sixth man of this team. Like, yes, they could be down five guys and Darvin Ham's going to start with four and Russ coming off the bench. Like,
my team is on the floor.
Yeah. This is the role Russell Westbrook plays, but you had a starting lineup of
Schroeder, Bryant, Walker, JTA, Reeves.
Right. And JTA in the second half of this game turned his ankle and it looked really painful. He's getting an MRI, they said after the game. And normally, you know, Juan Toscano-Anderson being injured wouldn't be a thing because he's not playing. But depending on this situation with LeBron, and for what it's worth, LeBron and AD and Patrick Beverley were all deemed day-to-day by Darvin Ham. So maybe come Friday, all three of them are available, and this is not a thing. We know Wenyen won't be. But, you know, if LeBron, that ankle is something that either he can't play on Friday or it gives him trouble Friday and he has to leave the game with Wenyen not there, even if AD is able to play, you start becoming extremely small in ways that JTA's absence actually matters. Just
anytime you're down that many guys, but it raises a question for me. Like, I know, like, Lakers fans were legitimately excited by the 2-0 start to this road trip. Like, it
should have been.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, it was on the heels of winning 5 of 6, but it's like, show me something against better competition. And you know what? You beat Milwaukee. You come out and the next game and you win decisively. It's like, you know, and Anthony Davis, meanwhile, is just continuing to throttle everyone. Like, people were legit excited by that. And losing two in a row, all of a sudden, you know, we talked before they left 3-3. That'd be a really good result to this trip, given who they're playing, given the schedule, all this other stuff. 3-3. Excellent road trip. You win the first two, though. You're like, you're starting to get greedy. Like, could you go 4-2? Could you go 5-1? The way that AD is playing, the way that, okay. I'm wondering at this point, especially when it comes to LeBron, you know, Gabriel's are going to be out. We already know he's not going to play Friday. But, you know, especially when it comes to LeBron, even if AD is still kind of under the weather, it's not good to have sick players playing. It's just, you know, do you punt the Philly game just to make sure everybody is extra healthy and just focus on Sunday in Detroit, win that game, come back 3-3? Like, I was thinking about that it might be worth it.
It depends on, you know, LeBron, this being a second end of a back-to-back and looking like, you know, it could have been a scheduled loss anyway, just because Toronto's a good team, second end of a back-to-back. They've been as uneven as they've been on the season. They've been extremely good in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So this might have felt like a game where if AD isn't available, it's at, and I don't know this one way or the other, but it's as much about not potentially aggravating that ankle as opposed to the ankle flaring up again. You know, this is an ankle that has been giving LeBron trouble throughout this season. He's turned it a few times. There's been a couple times where you've wondered if he was going to miss games. So I don't know if this is precautionary or it's bugging him. And we're
Darvin
not
did
like,
say like it might have been a game that he might have missed anyway, just his second night of a back to back.
Sure, but that doesn't answer anything about the ankle itself,
right?
Like,
exactly.
I'm saying I don't know if this is something where it's not worth potentially aggravating it in what is likely a game you're not going to win anyway, or it's bugging him and we don't want to make it any worse in a game that you're not likely going to win anyway. There's a difference.
This is the ankle. It's the same ankle that he dinged up in the Washington game.
Yes.
Right? One where we did remind people that, you know, this is why you don't want to have to play players in a blowout in the fourth quarter.
It's the same ankle that had been bothering him earlier in the season, around the time where he was also dealing with a perennial illness with the first bug that had gone through this team.
Right.
So, and this is also,
I don't like these moments. I'm sorry. I don't like these moments when we have to shake a disapproving finger at the team, like a couple of parents, you know, with their children. But this is one of those moments. We told you so. We told you about the dangers of not finishing games strong, and now LeBron is hurt. Look at what you people did. Why doesn't anybody listen to us?
It's certainly possible. I mean, we don't know all the details on this, but like when the Lakers let it be known that not only AD was out, but LeBron was out as well, also Patrick Beverley, you know, I tweeted out at Cam Brothers, on one hand, with AD out with the flu anyway, LeBron, the Lakers may just be taking a pragmatic approach with the ankle in the second end of a back-to-back, nothing more to see here. On the other hand, though, this is the lingering dread, even in the face of undoubtedly improved play. Mm-hmm. Because with both LeBron and AD, and granted AD, this is a flu, this is not an injury, but you are always worried about that shoe dropping. And as incredible as AD has been over the last few weeks, we both think he's been the best player in the NBA over the last few weeks.
He won Western Conference Player of the Week, Andy.
Yeah. And LeBron has been really good in the last four or five games and seems to have settled into that role where you're supplementing AD a little bit, like still playing at an extremely high level, but I think able to play at the most realistic version of high level, because you don't have to do everything now because AD is doing everything. Mm-hmm. But you're always nervous with this setup. And I think what we're dealing with right now, even if it ultimately ends up kind of nothing, it's why you never get too comfortable as a Laker fan.
I want to look ahead at this a little bit, because, you know, there was so much optimism based on how they played after they won 8 of 10 that it was, I wonder if people were almost hoping they could skip steps. So I want to look at kind of what's upcoming when you talk about making sure LeBron is healthy, making sure Wendy and Gabriel is healthy, making sure Anthony Davis isn't doing anything that's going to make it more likely that he gets hurt. And so we'll do all that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business, and you want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available, and that's why you need to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your job faster and for free, and it's easy to lay out all the information about your business, the work environment that you want to foster, type of projects that you do, and from there, you just add the job that you're looking to fill and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. And simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. Small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. So LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, so I meant to ask you, actually, were you surprised, Andy, that Darvin didn't start Westbrook?
No.
Given how many people were injured?
Nope. Not only, Brian, was I not surprised, I put out a poll on Twitter at Cam Brothers with LeBron and, all caps, Davis and, all caps, and two of those like little asterisks to let you know you're really emphasizing the and.
Mm-hmm.
Bev out. Will Darvin Ham actually start Russ or keep playing him off the bench? Either way, predict the starting lineup. My prediction was Russ off the bench, lineup Schroeder, Lonnie, Austin Reeves, Troy Brown Jr., Thomas Bryant. So 4 out of 5. I'd forgotten JTA was on the team. We learned not only does Darvin really consider Russ the sixth man come hell or high water.
This has been such a massive change for Westbrook. And such a big thing that they've asked him to swallow and kind of do and accept without complaint, that once you get him in that role and he's thriving as much as Westbrook, I think, is going to thrive in any role right now, and all the, you don't change that up. You do not do it. And I am a big believer, like, you know, coaches will often do what Darvin did on Wednesday, which is like bring a guy who hasn't played and put him in the starting lineup in an effort to disrupt the rest of the rotation as little as possible. So I was completely not surprised that he did it the way he did. I was just curious your thoughts there. But back to the point we were making before, like the Lakers are currently 10-14. That's the record they're going to have going into the game on Friday against Philadelphia. Let's just say they split and they come back 11-15. You're 4 games under .500 when you left. You're 4 games under .500 when you come back. You then turn around and you're playing Boston on Tuesday at Staples. And you come back, at the Crypt. And then Denver. And then you're right back out on the road. And so this health thing is really important, because the schedule does not let up through the end of the month. It is heavy on road games, heavy on playoff teams. And I just think there's a temptation to try to, while the team is playing well, rush ahead and skip steps. I still don't think, even with Davis playing the way that they are, even with LeBron seeming to fit in, Russ fit, I don't think they can rush getting back much faster to like 500 than we had talked about before. I don't think that much changes.
Clarify,
still, to me at least, going to be a long-term project that's going to take weeks to get back where they want to go, not days.
Okay, clarify what you mean, though, by skipping steps, because I don't understand.
I think there's a temptation to say, we just won 8 of 10. We can win 14 of 16. We can win 22 of 24. We can run off these incredibly long win streaks and kind of get caught up in the moment of, you know, obviously go out and try to win every game you can.
I was going to say, I don't almost understand what you're trying to avoid. They would look to win these games anyway.
Pushing, having LeBron play on a tender ankle, having guys, you know, AD, if he's feeling, you know, a back, you know, that back injury that's always got him on the, you know, the questionable list for every game. getting caught up in the quality of play now and feeling like you have to capitalize on the momentum. You have to keep it going. This is still a very long-term project, I think, to keep climbing in the Western Conference. And if you have to sacrifice a couple games along the way, even if it stops a really good feeling that you have, even if it stops a really good set of games that you have, and you have to lose 3 of 4, or you're setting yourself up to be in a position to lose 3 of 4, or 4 of 6 or whatever, because you have to keep guys healthy. You have to keep doing that. You have to keep the really long-term view on this season and not feel like you can make it all up really quickly, even while they're showing signs of improved play. That's what I'm getting at.
I guess I consider it a double-edged sword, because if you are that worried about LeBron's ankle for the next 55, 60 games, or AD's back for the next 55 or 60 games, I think in reality, what you're saying is we have no real confidence in this team long-term. Because if you are really that frightened of, the ground dropping out from underneath you that quickly, then there's no real momentum to be had anyway. Like, none of this works unless you believe those guys can stay healthy. You obviously have to be smart about how you go about doing this. But if you over bubble wrap it, you kind of end up doing what the Clippers are doing, which is, they're treading water fairly admirably, but they're not going anywhere until they can start getting themselves to a place where they are confident that Kawhi and Paul George are actually going to be available on a game in, game out basis. I don't know, 40% of the time, I mean, much less 75, 80, like, they're not going anywhere. Period. I mean, I think some of this, in a lot of ways, I don't see it as confidence that would motivate that as desperation. I actually think they would be more motivated by the fear of falling behind, as opposed to the fear of we have to capitalize on right now because we're so damn strong.
Yeah.
But what I think,
I can see that.
But what I think would actually really dictate it the most is what's the rest of the West doing? And as we're recording this, Phoenix just got their asses absolutely handed to them by the Celtics.
And the Clippers lost on Wednesday to Orlando.
Oh, and the Warriors just lost a game.
Lost to Utah.
As of this recording, the Lakers are 4 games below 500, but they're only 3.5 games from a 6th seed. Like, they're actually further from
500. Right, a lot of teams to jump over in between.
Right, but
yes,
the point
you
being,
are correct.
Though, considering they're 25 games into the season, 4 games below 500, and, this particular time, through no fault of their own, they've had a difficult time sustaining momentum. Right now, this is not because all of a sudden they've regressed. It's because guys are unavailable. They've correct. Lost remarkably little ground in this process. It's actually pretty shocking how little ground. Like, I'll say this, I thought 3 weeks ago, even before realizing they'd start playing better, it looked like they could be way more buried than they actually are right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it over the last 10 games, they've gained 2 on Oklahoma City. Not that anybody's really looking at Oklahoma City in the long term. Held, Timberwolves, Lakers are 6-4 in their last 10. Timberwolves are 6-4. The Warriors are 6-4. They've gained a game on the Clippers. They've gained 3 games on Portland. They've gained a game on the Mavs. They've gained 2 on Utah. Kings are 6-4. They've gained a game on Denver. It's really only the top of the conference, the Suns, the Pelicans, and the Grizzlies, that are still winning 7 of 10, 8 of 10, pretty consistently. And newsflash, Lakers aren't getting up to the 3 seed, no matter how this goes. Those teams are too good to let them back in. Even, I think, New Orleans, people are really starting to believe in them if they stay healthy. What is the seed that you kind of keep an eye on in terms of, like, you bring up an interesting point about looking at the rest of the conference and trying to figure out how hard do you need to press? How far behind is too far behind? Are you looking at the 10? Are you looking at the 8, where, the 7 and the 8, where you at least have a shot at just playing one game to advance to the big boy playoffs? Where would you put that line in terms of keeping an eye on it in the way you're talking about. So we'll answer that question next. I thought the point, Andy, you were making was an interesting one about not losing ground. Do you judge that based on like where the 6 seed is, where the 10 seed is, just like, you know, the absolute drop dead place you have to be? Is it the 7 or the 8 where you at least get an opportunity to play one game to get in the big boy playoffs? Where would you draw that line?
For the time being, for me, it's the 6 seed, because the 6 seed is not unrealistic. Like if they start playing, you know, if they get everybody back relatively soon and continue the way they had been playing, you know, during that stretch where they were beating up bad teams, but they looked legitimately good in the process. And then they beat Milwaukee with Milwaukee playing a really good game. They just outplayed Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And then they absolutely thumped the Wizards. And frankly, they gave the Cavs a game despite not having AD. And I, right now, if that's real, and the way the West is just not separating itself from each other, much less from the Lakers, for the time being, I'm actually keeping my eye on the 6 seed. Like it's the upper echelon right now of what feels realistic, but I don't think it feels unrealistic because, again, they're only 3.5 games outside of that 6 seed with 57 more to go. Like that's our 50. I'm doing math.
I was told there would be no math.
58?
50 something is what I would just go with. 50 something games to go and move on. Let somebody else take care of the arithmetic. Just say 50 something games remaining and you move on.
58.
All right.
Here we go. But that's even better. That's a bigger number than I originally threw out.
I agree with you. It's a good way of looking at it. That as long as you're 3 or 4 games behind a 6, you know, obviously that's a different deal in February as it is in early December. But we're only in early December. And if you're still 3 or 4 games behind in early January, when the schedule does flip a little bit, that's what I said. Like if you can tread water through this moment, through the, you know, these next couple of weeks, that's why I was saying, like, if guys are still squishy on Friday, fine, just win the Detroit game and come back 500, split against Boston. And I'm not saying you try. These are the calculations that you don't tell the players to make, but if you're responsible for their health, then that's what you have to navigate. Because like you said, none of this works if LeBron's not healthy, if AD isn't healthy. And you wish you were in a situation where you were 3 or 4 games over 500 and had more wiggle room, but you don't. But you can't undo the start. You can't replay those first 12 games. And statistically speaking, at least, that if you look at every number from those 10 games that you referenced when they were playing well, all of it suggests that the improvement was real. Not that they're an elite team, but that the improvement was real and they look a lot more legitimate than they did before.
Yeah, I mean, and also too, it just, the devil becomes in the details. Like we don't know the specifics of, you know, what motivated this with LeBron's ankle in terms of practice.
How bad was it? Yeah.
Versus concern. But like, you know, AD, for example, I agree. If this thing is lingering and he's still, we haven't gotten any update there either, but if it's still around 101, obviously he shouldn't play. If it's 99, get out there. You know, I mean, get out there. 99 is what? That's 4/10 above what is considered normal. I mean, that's negligible. You know me. I am never the says a guy, an athlete can play. You know, I never second guess guys. Like I don't, it's one of the only opinions I will never.
No, I think Ronnie Lott chopping off his finger to keep playing is dumb.
Well, no. I just mean like, I will never second guess whether or not an athlete.
Right. No, but my point is like some of these like stories of like guys doing crazy things to be able to play in games. I look at that. That is ridiculous. Don't do that. And I agree with you. You shouldn't question whether or not somebody is injured enough to play. It ain't you, and you're not you. How you handle your rec league game is not an apples to apples comparison to whether or not Anthony Davis can go play an NBA game.
But that said, in my totally unqualified medical opinion, 99 feels playable.
Two-digit temperature, get out and play.
Triple
digits, we can talk. Two digits, you go
two
play.
Two-digit point zero. Like, you start right. getting up to like 99.9, 99.8. Okay, I get digits. That.
Yeah. We're not playing around. Two digits, you play. Three digits, you sit. One digit, you sit. Zero. You got bigger problems. I am fascinated by the situation that the Lakers are in. When you start to calculate, we're going to talk a lot more about, you know, because the next week, this magical December 15th deadline that talks about, that opens up the trade market across the NBA. That's next week. We're getting into that. I think it's a week from today. And so the prospect of trading Patrick Beverley, Russ is still alive. The amount of players you could get back in a Westbrook deal, in a Nunn and Beverley deal packaged together. The Lakers are in this fascinating place where they've shown that they are incredibly fragile, that they're also playing with some potential, that the Westbrook thing actually could work, and you lose something by trading him. Not that you can't make it up, but you do lose something at this point by trading Westbrook. The Western Conference is stacked, but is also not running away from anyone. I wouldn't want to be Rob Pelinka anyway, because I don't want to be hated by so many people as he is hated by. I like being liked.
I absolutely want to be Rob Pelinka. It's a 4-year contract.
That's true.
Gobsmacks of money.
Yeah, he's very rich.
A lot of people don't like me, and I get paid way less.
I would like to amend my previous statement.
Pelinka's life in a heartbeat.
I would not like to be as unpopular as Rob Pelinka.
And again, a lot of people dislike us anyway.
I was about to say, but not on the same scale. Not on the same scale. Whatever. Popular as this post.
Whatever.
But he is extraordinarily wealthy and does have, to his credit, tremendous hair. Mm-hmm. So, okay, fine. I would be Rob Pelinka, but I don't envy the position he's in. Trying to figure out the right answer to these questions of what exactly is it? Because, you know, you have a lot of people, fans, people who do what we do or whatever, who are beating down the doors to do anything. And some of those things are not going to help this team. Some of them are only going to make it worse. And some of them could make you do this really wrong. Like, it is a 5-year wasteland the Lakers are looking at. Like, I don't envy that part of his job, because there's no clear answer here. You can make an argument for go all in. You can make an argument for hell no, and everything in between.
It's a really tricky thing for him to figure out. So we'll see what he ends up doing. But it feels more likely than not that something is going to happen, whether a blockbuster deal or something mid-size. I would at this point be more surprised if they didn't make a deal than if they did. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I would agree, but I said at the beginning of the season that I still think Westbrook finishes the season. I said that Westbrook finishes the season as a Laker. I still think that's true. You, Andy, have just started doing some research on potential returns for this hypothetical Patrick Beverley, Kendrick Nunn salary package, which is basically what that is. What might be available for those two guys if that's the direction the Lakers go? You've done some research on that, so we'll take some time to talk about that for Friday's show, and obviously give you any information about who might be available for Friday's game, a big one against Philadelphia. We all remember what the Joel Embiid Anthony Davis matchup looked like last year. That was easily the highlight of the season for AD. So hopefully he's on the floor to do that again. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show and to participate in that great community, zooming towards 10,000 subscribers. We'll see everybody on Friday.